Hey guys, it's Jenna Elfman from Fear the Walking Dead. I play Laura. No, I play Naomi. No, I play June. I play June on Fear the Walking Dead. And you're listening to the Fear the Walking Dead talk through on Golden Spiral Media.
Fear the Walking Dead talk through episode 45. Close Your Eyes review.
Welcome to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of Fear the Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278. Or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hey, survivors. Welcome to another fine episode of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
And this evening, we are covering season 4, episode 10 of Fear the Walking Dead, which is titled Close Your Eyes. It is written by co-executive producer Shintaro Shimosawa and directed by Michael E. Satrazimus. All right. And before we get started, I just want to say, and I doubt that anyone of his family is listening, but you may not know that we had a death in the Golden Spiral Media family over the past week. David, who was the host of Dope Blink, which is the Doctor Who podcast, passed away very suddenly last week. I think it was either Tuesday night or Wednesday. And we just want to offer our condolences to his family at this time. All right. Well, with that, let's get started. So, Mark, what did you think of Close Your Eyes?
My rating would be, I give it 8 out of 10. Talk to dead birds in a fireplace.
All right. Kyle, what did you think?
I gave it actually a much better rating. 9. Get the hell out or I will kill you. Out of 10.
Well, I am right in between you guys. I thought, first of all, this was a much better episode than last week, but it still had some weak points. So I am going to give it a score of 8.5 out of 10. Annoying kids that finally speak. Or simply 8.5 bottles, because if there's any textbook example of a bottle episode in TV, this is probably one of them, because almost all of it occurred in the house. So that's why I call it bottles. All right. Mark, why don't you start with, well, we only got actually two listener ratings this week, but why don't you give the first one?
Cheryl Fox gives it 9 out of 10 hurricane force winds.
And Glennis Gulch, she gave it an 8 out of 10, A Quiet Place. Just reminded me of that movie, although I haven't seen it yet, with the family sitting on the lounge floor, camping out, and shh. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, I know, Mark, you've seen it, and because I've heard you rave about it, but...
Well, yeah, that film was actually filmed up by me, by that road from my house, so...
So you were in it?
No, I wish. I wish. They cost me 15 minutes delay from my house to go to work every morning.
Yeah. Maybe that would explain how long it's been taking me to get to work the last couple of days. There's a movie showing. No, there is. Or playing. There isn't. But shooting. There's a movie shooting. God.
We got it.
That joke, I screwed it up 6 ways from Sunday. But anyway. All right, let's move on to Awesome Sauce. Awesome Sauce! All right, Mark, why don't you give the first one?
Glennis Gultz gives it,
she has 3, yeah.
Yeah, she has 3. So she says, Tree Walker Dream Catcher. which is pretty cool, which I never really envisioned that zombie as a dream catcher. Alicia's double stabbing walker kills, very skillful, which I do appreciate too. I thought that was pretty cool. Gave me that blade vibe, which I state later. Both Alicia and Alexa were excellent in this episode, maybe even Emmy worthy. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be. Sorry, Glennis. You may think it was Emmy worthy, and I would say that their performances were really good. But I think, unfortunately, when it comes to this franchise, the best that they could hope for would be Saturn Awards.
Well, they're also the Red Machete from the original Walking Dead Prime it's looking to be nominated for an Emmy for its short form story.
Yes, yeah. It is, but it has a much shorter competition. You know, it's not vying against so many other shows. So, and because it's probably high profile, it gets a nomination. So, you know, don't get me wrong. Red Machete was really well done. It's probably the best of the shorts that The Walking Dead has done. But, you know, it's kind of like winning best zombie show. You know, if there was an Emmy category of best zombie TV show, you know, yeah, The Walking Dead would win. But, you know, what's it going up against? iZombie, Z Nation. What's that? What's the one that Drew Barrymore's in? Santa Clarita Diet. Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's right.
And probably a few more on Netflix or Amazon or whatever that I don't know the names of. But anyway, it's a small thing. So just remember that next year when the Emmy category has or categories have best zombie show.
And then it moves on to vampires and werewolves.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Kyle, let's give the next awesome sauce. All right.
The next awesome sauce comes from Cheryl Fox. She says, "So I really appreciated the fact that Alicia played the adult and helped Charlie work through her anxiety, i.e. seeing her parents turn and scared to really do the same."
All right, let's move on to our own. So Mark, you've got a few here.
Well, yes, Glennis actually pointed it out, and I said it, you know, the double kill by Alicia in the beginning. That was awesome. That just reminded me of Blade. It's like double-handed. The look and feel of the traditional zombie movie within the storm and trying to batten down the hatches, Alicia trying to get Charlie to help her and nail down, that was pretty cool. Charlie just looking at the walkers in the window in fear. Now they're just like smudging. It's kind of almost like I have a DVD that you could actually put on your TV or put on a projector on the side of your house or something where they're like attacking a window. The zombie dangling by that limb over the deck taunting Charlie was pretty cool in itself. It had that old classic zombie film vibe and had that darkness to it because of the storm and them being trapped in a house, kind of like the original Night of the Living Dead. Then the opening with the theme and the words being washed and moved away by the wind, with the water on the lens of the screen of the window, like a window, you know, the drops hitting it and then the words just kind of just wash or get winded away. I thought that was really cool. Yeah. They've been doing a lot with these introductions as far as with the words and what we see in the very beginning, kind of reminiscent or trying to give us a little story or a pictograph of what's going on. Mm-hmm. We don't even know until we actually see the show.
Yeah, to that end, I'll just stop you just to say that I had this one as my awesome sauce too. I thought that this title scene was the best of the lot so far of the 10. I thought this was even better than the one that looked like a videotape.
Cool. And this was more about character development within it. I guess they really don't want to kill a kid. You know, they don't want to kill Charlie. So, but, you know, I have to give it its just dues when it comes to that. They're actually looking to expand on these characters. So in order to do that, they had to do a bottle episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't mind bottle episodes. In fact, bottle episodes are often some of the best dramatically. Like the one I always think of is the episode from the third season of Breaking Bad titled Fly, which, you know, the entire thing was literally in a single room, you know. So that one was, you know, one of the best episodes of Breaking Bad. And you can do a lot with that. Like it's funny how sometimes restrictions will fire your creativity. So, so yeah, sometimes bottle episodes are some of the best, you know?
Yep.
All right, Kyle, you've got a couple?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agreed with a lot of the people, you know, with the Alicia's double-handed takedown. It was just cool in the way that it was shot. And just like when she took them both out, she kind of did do that. I guess it was, you know, if it is Blade reminiscent, but it was just like this total, like, awesome, like, you know, arm pointing down, you know, like just, I don't know. It's like she had some, like, this is my signature move.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was just that, it was just so cool, like, just seeing that. And then, like, you know, I agreed with like the opening theme, stuff like that, but I really enjoyed the progression of the storm through the whole episode. You know, it was just like it started off to being like, oh, it's just, you know, there's a storm out there, to like it just kept building up. And then as it got worse and worse, you know, then like the walkers finally started showing up. And it was almost kind of like, and I kind of was thinking, like, how do I describe this? But it felt like the whole episode was like a boiling water, like in a kettle. And just like over time and to the very end is when it just, you know, then it exploded. And then we got all that, you know, all the excitement and danger and just like them down there, you know, in the basement full of water. Cause I don't know. I love that progression. And when we're talking about how stupid the storm seemed to be at the like last episode, like this is, to me, was like exactly how I wanted to see it, you know? So I thought it was just really cool. Just it helped make the whole show, or like the whole episode, just more exciting and more edge of your seat. Cause of just like what's coming up.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that, actually, because what I said along those lines was that, unlike last week, you know, if you go back to last week's episode, you will hear that I had a lot to say about the hurricane and, you know, like one friend of ours and friend of the show, Lara, was trying to argue with me, over and over, saying that it was a tornado, not a hurricane, but they have clearly said it's a hurricane. Mm-hmm. Now, as I said last week, you can't have tornadoes that come out of hurricanes or out of the storm of a hurricane, whatever, as a result of the hurricane. But this is supposed to be a hurricane, not tornadoes. And we saw some crazy pulling and, you know, lifting of walkers in the air and selective blowing of walkers. I didn't have any of those problems this week at all. I thought that it was top notch, with one small issue that I wouldn't say is hurricane related. It's more like situation related. I'll explain it when we get there. But as far as the storm and the hurricane, I thought all of it was very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very dark. You know, it matched the mood, and I really enjoyed the work that they did on it this week. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a 180 from last week.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say something else, and I don't remember. It'll come to me in a few minutes. All right, let's move on to the week variety.
You're worthless and weak.
Okay. Well, it looks like we only got one weak sauce this week, and I guess I'll give it. And it's from Cheryl Fox, who, again, helped us with the show notes this week. So thank you, Cheryl. She said, the only weak sauce I can think of is that we didn't see anyone else, but I enjoyed just Alicia and Charlie. Well, that's kind of what it means to be a bottle episode, you know. And I do have some info about that, that I'll get to in the news ratings and info section. But let's move on to our own weak sauces. So, Mark, what do you have?
Well, I had a part of my awesome sauce, but it made sense. But I'm kind of split. So I have to ask the other Mark, who sounds a lot like Negan. Are you kidding me? it is a bottle episode. We keep getting them. And I just see a reoccurrence from the actual, you know, The Walking Dead proper. And they did this all season 5. I really don't want to see it consistent. But it worked well in this case to develop the characters, like I said before.
Yeah, I mean, they did it. I guess you're thinking of like the last part of the first part of season 5, or definitely season 4B. I mean, that whole thing when they were coming out of the prison and onto Terminus, that whole thing was like this. But I would argue that those are some of the better episodes of the series. I'm not real keen on the still episode, as I've mentioned more than once. But I mean, when I've gone back and watched it, it didn't annoy me as much as it did the first time when the whole thing was centered around her getting a drink. You know, I think that was my main gripe of it. But anyway, 4B, as much as it could be annoying when we were watching it from week to week, binging it, it was actually very solid second half of that season. So, and they were all kind of like this. So I tend to think that we're going to see, and judging by the next episode's sneak peek, it's probably going to be centered around Morgan and, you know, the people he comes across next episode. And, you know, the next one, I think, is probably based on the fact that it's Coleman Domingo and I've heard him talk about it. It's probably going to be centered around the tank. So that means in the tank would be Althea and June, right?
I don't know. Josh.
Is John in the tank?
No.
I thought John was with...
John was with Morgan.
Oh, really? Oh, I forgot.
No, he's not with Morgan.
Oh, no, he's with John.
He's with... John is with Strand.
Yeah, Strand and John.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, I tend to think that we're going to have that similar kind of strategy throughout. And I'm okay with that. I mean, if the stories are good, and I thought that this was generally a good episode with a couple of things that I thought could have been better, you know, I'm okay with that. But all right, Kyle, what do you have?
My weak sauce was Alicia getting knocked out by the car door. And I guess, you know, the wind just hit it just right and it knocked her back. And I get what they, you know, like, I get basically how that could happen with a hurricane winds and stuff like that catching. But like, I've fallen off high distances. I've been knocked off a 2-story house and like literally like fell, you know, like face first, you know, when I was a kid. I've been hit by a car on my bike. I have never once have been like knocked unconscious.
Neither have I.
Seeing that, it didn't even look at all like that was even enough. Like,
yeah, just and it didn't even look like she hit her head.
No,
you know?
No.
If anything, the worst that would have happened to her would have been she, you know,
got the wind knocked out of her.
Got the wind knocked out of her. Yeah, exactly. So I didn't buy that at all. I thought it was a contrived plot device. And I have a couple of things that slide, so to speak, right into that. So the first thing I'll say is, and why did the car door not open? I mean, that was convenient and rather weird. I mean, what was stopping it from opening? I thought that was a little... a necessary difficulty. In other words, kind of shoddy writing there.
Yeah.
and to that end, how did little girl Charlie drag an unconscious Alicia back into the house? I mean, you know, she's probably anywhere from, I don't know, 2 to twice her size to 3 times her size. I don't know. I don't know how, you know, this, what the weight of like a 10 or 11 year old girl would be versus a 22 year old girl or whatever she is. But okay, maybe not three times, but half or close to half, you know, like unless she has that word that you called her last week, Kyle, strength. And you can fill in the blanks, listeners, to what that word is. We're not going to reveal it. But unless she is very strong, I can't see it. And supposedly from, I think it was from Talking Dead or something, I don't know, that she woke up on a sled. I didn't really notice that, but I did hear another podcast mention that. So, my last weak sauce is that I did not buy in the least that family would have a picture of them, like on their the central pick on their picture on their mantle of the four of them laying on the ground. I mean, that was just so contrived, you know. So I saw that and went, yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, I like just to be devil's advocate, like, I mean, I can see that kind of a staging thing for a family picture because my family's done it too. But the fact is, though, it's like, who, like, was someone standing on a ladder? You know, it just like logically thinking about like that would have not been so easy. Like, what was it? You know, I mean, there's
is the fifth person,
right? And then, oh, maybe the fifth person was the guy stuck up in the, you know, the tree, like Charlie.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe he was just up there taking a picture and then he died.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see it, but it was just very, very convenient just for this part of the story.
Yeah. And the other weak sauce, I guess I'll throw in a fourth, that I might as well say here, is that the performances between the two of them were great, but some of the dialogue was pretty on the nose and it wasn't very nuanced. You know, it seemed like kind of, I wouldn't say sophomoric, but just it could have been better, you know? So that's what I thought.
Yeah, I thought actually a lot of the dialogue was really kind of amazing. But I mean, there was just very, anyway, yeah, there were parts that were like, I was like, wow, my head, you know, I was just like, this is so enjoyable. But then all the little weak things that kept popping up, it just seemed like you're just kind of forcing this along and like not thinking about how to do it. It just,
maybe that's the best way I can say it is like some of the dialogue was actually really, really good. And others were, it just seemed rushed. Like they needed another draft of the script to just, you know, punch up the dialogue a little bit. Not a very weak thing to say, but it's worth saying. All right. Well, we have some sad sauce.
Aww.
All right. I guess I'll give this one because, Mark, you have the sad sauce here. So I'll give this. Cheryl Fox, she says that Charlie revealed she watched her parents reanimate. Yeah, it was kind of sad. And, you know, does that explain how Charlie is a bad seed? I don't know. Did that affect her in some way?
Could. I mean.
Or should I say? Oh, I used to love playing that with Chris when Chris was still around on the show. All right, Mark, your sad sauce?
It was sad to hear about Charlie's family and how it possibly started. Plus, it was really sad that the kid can't do what she's told. I'm flashing back to Carl and not staying in the house. Apparently, Charlie can't take direction as well.
It seems to be a prerequisite. If you're a child in this apocalypse, you can't take direction.
That's funny.
All right, Kyle, what you got?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of, it was sad to see like the family pictures that Alicia threw out. And it, cause a lot of this was a little bit, you know, some of it on the nose, but basically just like of Alicia dealing with, you know, her own loss and her throwing out, you know, those pictures of the family who were four people, you know, and, you know, it was kind of like she didn't want them in the house. She wanted to get rid of them. She put them outside. And then she just basically, she threw all the pictures out there with them. And it was kind of like threw them out as like the family that she lost. She just didn't want to have anything to do with them.
And then Charlie goes and picks them up.
And
so doing basically one was taking out the trash and the other one's a hoarder.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. One just cannot let it go.
Yeah, to that end, and it's kind of part of that, I thought that in the, as Alicia was remembering Nick and Madison in those flashbacks, it was really nice to see them, to actually get that visual of them. And is it time to get rid of this washed out look? I'm getting a little tired of it. I especially noticed it when the stuff from the diamond came back, and that's like vivid color. I don't know. I think I want to see at least by the end of the season that the colors go back to normal.
Well, actually, if you watch AMC and they do the behind the scenes footage on the AMC.com and you go through, they do that whole scene from last week's episode where it was done during the day and they just cloud it digitally. And they make the rain look darkening and everything else. So I'm assuming that's what their chief goal is, to film a lot of this stuff during the day, and they're able to cloud it digitally to make it look darker.
Darker, yeah. I mean...
And you just reminded me of what I wanted to say earlier, that with the lighting, Alicia, there's that one close-up of her when she's, I don't know, cleaning off a weapon, her like, whatever you call the thing from the machine gun.
Yeah, the barrel or whatever.
The barrel. And she had a look that was very reminiscent of a walker. You know, the with the lighting, her skin looked very walkerish, you know, kind of like a mottled gray, and she had like some kind of, I don't know if it was like a blood stain or dirt or something on her neck that also made it kind of look like she was dead. So I thought that was really cool. So that was the part that I was trying to think of that I didn't think of earlier. So, but to that, the flashbacks, it was nice to see them, but it was sad to see them because, you know, it still hurts. Both of them, I would even say it hurts. And to these characters, you know, Nick's the latest death, but, you know, to us, Madison is the one that we're still like dealing with, but, it's sad to see them both, you know,
I
sat there thinking afterwards, like, you know, how would they be in this half season? Like, what would the story be like if they just hadn't killed them off?
Well, that's why I think this episode, though, kind of also highlighted or like was pushing towards the fact that it's like Alicia is taking over their shoes, and we're seeing her, because like some of that flashback was really neat to see, but then sad. Yeah. But it started off really like explosion and like, you know, Nick bleeding to like where Nick was smiling. And then, you know, like Madison was getting the walkers to, you know, follow her like. Almost like she saved you, and like Nick, you know, was a good guy. He wanted to save people. So, I mean, I felt the progression of it really quickly was like her thinking of like, no, you killed my family, to being like, you know, they really helped and saved, and they saved me. And, you know, it was interesting to see, and I liked it, but, you know, I kind of don't want to see it again. Like, we need to, like, you know, we need to move past them, because I want to be reminded of them all the time, because then I'll think about why aren't they in the show.
right. Yeah. I guess that's a good way to put it. It's a dish that we don't have to keep getting served. I think that one kind of flashback, I hope that is it for the rest of the season.
That was our farewell.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to what sauce.
What?
All right. Cheryl's got one. Kyle, why don't you read that one?
Yep. Cheryl Fox, her what sauce was, I thought it was odd that when the walker fell off the tree and broke the cellar door, Charlie stated that he saved us. Really? How long was the walker in the tree?
When I read that, I thought of there was a kid in one of the episodes of Star Trek Discovery who yelled out, "Who saved us?" And one of the podcasts I listened to have played that that little clip. Probably 50 times since. So it was anyway, because it's annoying. All right. Glynis, she has one. She says, the tree walker ending up saving both from certain death. Yeah. All right. So we've got a few what sauces. Mark, you've got a couple. So you got to take a break doing the listener ones, but you're in the hot seat now.
Did Alicia place those people in the order of the picture to be like the picture? That was really odd. it was like, that was a bit creepy.
Well, and I said earlier, why did that picture even exist? It's just, I could see that picture existing, but not in the middle of the mantle. You know, it just, to me, that's like a goofy picture that's, you know, maybe a 5x7 that's, you know, sitting on the side, not like your centerpiece picture that you show everybody.
Or, I mean, it's like an inside family joke or story. Yeah. Then, I mean, I could see maybe that, but it was just the fact, I don't like whenever they do stuff like that, that basically it's like, you know, that there was no way Alicia was like thinking about that. And she just happened to lay them down exactly and then go back inside and see that picture. I mean, I get that you're trying to invoke that feeling and it's like, oh, just on the nose. And so I guess we have to suspend disbelief and just being like, oh, that's just to say like she's, you know, in this situation and there's this family that similar to hers. But yeah, it was just, it's like, what? Like
an Alanis Morissette song.
Is that ironic?
Yeah. Don't you think?
It's like rain on your dead wedding day. House you're staying
that
at.
It's even better than I realized. All right. That doesn't even need a rim shot. All right.
Yeah, I have one more. What was with giving Charlie the flash guard from the gun that, you know, Alicia uses as a knife and then taking it back again? is she pretty much a Native American giver?
Oh,
I'm being politically correct there. Come on.
Are you though?
I don't know. If I can't say R word,
I don't know if that, I don't know if that's and if you're a Native American, I know Mark meant no disrespect.
No, I don't. It's something that we've been saying for the past how many, like over 100 years. Well, but you know, but I just try to put it in a politically correct term.
She is. I think there's a better politically correct term. I just can't think of it right now. But
a B word.
Yeah. What's that?
A B word.
No. I don't think that's politically correct. But anyway. I mean, she the whole giving her that thing in the first place was kind of dumb. I didn't believe it. And then, you know, like you say, not even 2 minutes later, she takes it back. You know, so, all right, Kyle, what you got?
Oh my God. Close the curtains if there's a bunch of walkers outside. Like, how could you even sleep on the couch with them just out there? I mean, I'm sorry, but I would not sleep soundly, or I would not sleep knowing that there's just a pane of glass between all these walkers just looking at me, and I'm just gonna, I'll just lay down here with the fire next to me. It's, I was like, close. Yeah. The curtains are right there. Just close them. I had a big issue with that when I watched it, and again on the bus, because I was like sitting there earlier today. I was just like, no, just close those windows. I
agree. And actually, Cheryl, who was putting in things in the notes, she actually reacted to this. She said, "Totally agree. I kept worrying about all the doors and shutters banging and not being closed." I agree. Well, my what sauce, I was kind of debating whether I should put it here or should I put it somewhere else. Because it could have been a weak sauce, definitely. But I have to ask, okay? Like, I'm not, you know, from Texas, but I have lived now twice in Florida. And one thing I noticed when I lived here the first time, and I certainly notice it now, there are no basements here. Like, nobody has a basement. And I think there are logical reasons why that is. Flooding would be one of the biggest reasons for it. So we don't exactly know where they are. We believe they're still in Texas. And, what's her name? Charlie was talking about going to Galveston, which is that makes it sound like they're close to Houston. Because I think Galveston is about like an hour or 50 miles or so outside of Houston. It's, you know,
southwest of the bottom part of Texas.
But it's right on the coast. Like, right. I think part of it is maybe all of it is, I don't know if that's considered an island or, you know, kind of, what do you call that? I can't think of it, but basically surrounded by water almost. And, so wherever they are, if they are somewhere close enough to get hurricane-like weather or tropical storms, and even if it's happens every couple of years, they're not going to have basements there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry. And I even pulled a link looking this up, and it explains that, you know, in pretty much all of the South, Southern states don't have basements, and definitely East Texas is one of the places where there are no basements. And our friend Paik, he corroborated this. He doesn't live right there. He's in Tyler, but you know, I figured close enough. He knows the area a lot better than we do. And I asked him, and he said the same thing. It was a minor part of the story, but I remember when I was watching it the first time, like, really? A basement? Really?
Yeah. I think it's just because that's kind of one of the things that people are most likely probably not going to really think about. Because, yeah, in Oklahoma, you don't have basements, and it's because there's just too much clay. And so it's like there's no way to block water from being able to get in.
That's right.
Yeah. But I've been in a house that did have a basement, but it wasn't all the way underground. But they had like three sub pumps, you know, just to constantly pump water out of it. Yeah. So it was,
stupid. And that was that article that I found. That was one of the reasons why it came back, the soil and the fact that a lot of places, especially in Florida, where the water line is like, you know, only a few feet underground. So it's just way too easy for basements to flood. And yeah, you know, so I was moderately annoyed with this enough where it was like, okay, is this weak sauce or is this what sauce? And that's why I put it in what sauce. So,
well, maybe the writers are doing something to us. Maybe like with Pee Wee Herman and Pee Wee's Big Adventure, when he goes to look for his bike and the when he goes to the psychic and she goes, it's at the Alamo. In the basement.
Well, San Antonio, there may be basements because that's probably far enough away from the coast. So it might make sense there. Not to spoil a joke, but I'm just saying. if they're anywhere near like Houston, I think it's like, you know, but I want to say it's about 50 miles away from the coast. And yet we know it can get hurricanes because, you know, it had a big one, you know, not that long ago. And there were, you know, a lot of problems there, because of it. I can't remember which hurricane it was. But it was, and of course they had to take in a lot of people from Katrina, which was New Orleans, and Mississippi and all that. But anyway, it wasn't that one. I know that they did have one though.
where it came into play. So, all right. So we've got some quotes this week again. So we're going to play Quote Sauce. And when it comes to Quote Sauce,
you know what it is.
That will become more appropriate next week.
Yeah.
All right. I will just, I've got it down for me. So I will say, Cheryl had a couple. She says, I don't want to become one of them, which she says, Charlie was more worried about becoming a walker than dying. She is stating what everyone has always thought, but it also seems like a boogeyman fear because she is a kid. But knowing now that she watched her parents come back, that's pretty scary. And then the second quote she said is, I did it for those who come back. And that was Alicia after burying the Walker family name taken from The Talking Dead. I guess they said Walker family, which, you know, obviously they weren't the Walkers, but all right. I didn't have any quotes, but you guys looks like you both did. So Mark, why don't you read yours?
This one comes from Charlie and Alicia when they were driving in the car, and Alicia says, close your eyes. Charlie looks at her, goes, doesn't say, but that look goes, and she goes, why? And I thought Alicia was going to stab Charlie in the head when she closed her eyes. But Alicia goes, I'm going to take you to the beach. Now, this was a good sentiment of trust with Alicia, with her memories of the beach with Charlie, because Charlie never had gone to the beach, and that was something that she shared. So it made sense. And at the end, and it's showing a trust and showing some sort of affection to the kid. So I'm assuming, like I said earlier, they're looking to keep Charlie around.
Yeah. I think after this episode, that's kind of a given. And I thought the same thing too. I was just like, oh, she's going to just take her out right here. I was like, where's the gun? Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Well,
I will just say, Alicia, you were supposed to. Yeah, to that, I'm going to say, I have to say, I thought that too. And I was just wondering what she was going to do there. But I was kind of surprised when she said, you know, I'm going to take you to the beach. Because I'll say, you know, Charlie, she is such a beach.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, that was bad. Kyle, what you got?
All right. Mine is, you made me a kid, Charlie, but you know what you did, and that makes you garbage. It makes you a waste of a person, worse than stumbling around out there tearing into people. See, I hope you live to a ripe old age so that you have to remember what you did, who you are, and how you can never, ever make up for it. And that's by Alicia when she's talking to Charlie at the beginning. And I thought it was brutal and brilliant in how I feel exactly like about Charlie.
Yeah, those are harsh words for a kid, though, to hear.
Oh, I thought...
The kid deserves those harsh words, and though. I mean, yeah.
And this was the beginning before, you know, Alicia kind of had her little moment. Because throughout the whole show, like, you could see how Alicia was just like, just tired of her. Just like, just shut up. You're like,
yeah,
quit talking. Or like, no, you go over here, grab your jacket. To like later towards the end where she's starting to kind of let down her guard, kind of put herself, I think, in Charlie's shoes. I really have to say, though, this episode was exactly the connection that I needed for me to have any kind of feeling for Charlie, because now I feel that that's what we're getting, and I can put my, you know, things aside.
Anger.
you can't
put them aside
because I don't have a gun with me right now. so I can put it aside.
Well, can I show a comparison in some way? Carl wound up trying to shoot that walker back, and I forget, it was season two.
It was judge, jury, executioner.
And that walker wound up coming out and biting Dale.
Or ripping him apart.
Eviscerating Dale.
Yeah. And he felt responsible. At this point, obviously, Charlie flat out shot.
Yeah.
You know, Nick, and you know, it was kind of obvious, but in a sense where this is kind of her trying to redeem herself, almost like Carl did, because he actually had to bring that information up to his father and to everybody else and how he felt all that time.
Yeah.
I see kind of a similarity in some ways. It's kind of a redeeming aspect in some way.
I would still like to know what motivated Charlie to do the things that she did. Like, why did she kill Nick? Was it just out of revenge for him killing Ennis? And why did she, you know, lure the vultures in? I mean, was she just following orders, or, you know, like how much of the things that she did was because she's a bad seed, or how much of it was because she made bad decisions? You know, I would like to know that. Cause I mean, she doesn't act like a bad kid, except, you know, and she finally started talking this episode, which made her less annoying when she started talking.
That sounded just like a kid though. And
yeah,
fearful and upset.
Yeah. Now,
mind you, that I think they're trying to play that character role of kids in this situation and how they are having to grow up within.
Yeah.
This world.
Yeah.
So that could be their motivation and how it is. So, because they don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's it for quotes. So let's move on to our regular feedback.
We can talk about it.
Done talking. Time to listen.
All right. Well, Mark, you're going to start it off with some feedback from Mark.
Yep. Mark DeCote. He says, what a slow and mostly boring episode. These past couple of seasons, I've enjoyed Fear of the Walking Dead much more than The Walking Dead, but I don't know if I can keep saying that. The second half of the season has been pretty meh so far. For the first time in several years, the trailer for The Walking Dead has me really excited for its return. I'm just hoping there will be more exciting / action scenes than just what we see in the trailer. Same here, Mark. I see. I feel the same way.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing that you can say negative about this, and that's, I think, part of the reason why I didn't mark it as, you know, high. Like, originally I gave it a 9, but I was like, yeah, it's not a 9, because I did find myself a couple of times in the middle of it, kind of like, you know, checking Facebook, and like I was doing the things that I get really annoyed that people do. And it wasn't keeping me interested the entire time. You know, and eventually I focused on it again, but there was a point about middle episode where it was kind of dragging a little bit, and it was slow. So Mark, not you, Mark, but the other Mark, I get what you're saying there. And of course I didn't care for, the last episode too much. When I say that though, like I gave it a 7, maybe I need to explain to people how I mark things. It's basically a 7 is the minimum for a show to hit for me to keep watching it. So if a show that I'm watching starts scoring in the sixes, I'll eventually like fall off of it. That's kind of my thing. So a show's got to be, you know, a 7 or higher to keep me interested enough to watch it. That's kind of my barometer. That's why, like, essentially when this show, or, you know, the other two shows that I podcast about, when they get into the sixes, that's when it starts to worry me. And I always think of
Danger Zone.
Yeah. I think of Falling Skies.
Oh.
When I started giving in the last season some episodes a 3, like I had to struggle hard just to finish that season, but I wanted to do it because I'd seen it, you know, as much as I had. But like that was tough, man.
Yeah. You know, we all had to suffer through that too.
Yeah. Yeah. That show was really good the first 3 seasons. And then it just took a left turn when they switched showrunners. And
it's like, it's just they gave up. And then it was like, we have to finish this.
They, like, cause they had, I think it was Graham Yost the first season, and he's the guy behind Justified, and you know, he's done several things, but you know, so he had it. And then the second season, I can't remember the guy's name. It doesn't matter, of course, but it starts with an A. And, you know, his two seasons really good. And then it went to David Icke, who was involved with Battlestar Galactica. And, I will say that he wasn't the vision behind Battlestar Galactica, because his two seasons were horrible on Long Skies. And to that, I have to say,
what is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
All right, we'll stay on point.
Yeah,
now.
Let's stay.
All right, next one, Kyle.
All right, PB and Zane says, I watched yesterday, but due to life circumstances, I'm unable to watch till Monday evening. I don't have much to say other than it was kind of slow, and I agree with Mark D.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very accurate, I think, to say.
I guess I must have, because it must have helped that I could only watch parts of it when I did my rewatch, so I never really felt that it was slow, but that's also because I was taking several hours breaks in between.
Well, yeah, to that, I will say that, like, the first time I found it slow, and I got into it more on the second watch. Mm-hmm. I think I watched it three times. So, yeah. So, there was something that, when we were talking about Charlie, I forgot to mention this before, but I'm going to say it now. Did you guys watch Talking Dead?
Yes. I did not get it.
Well, Mercedes Mason was on there, and of course she used to play Ophelia. And two things I'll say about that. She and her friends call Charlie Garbage Girl.
Yeah.
Which I loved. And she's really funny on there, and I wish that they had done a lot more with her in the show, and especially like used some of that humor that she's really funny. And I would have to think that she would be, good, you know, comedically, like almost like a much better looking and not so dense, version of, or not on the spectrum anyway, version of Eugene on the show. Yes, much better looking.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I forgot to say that earlier. Cheryl, she says, I enjoyed this episode. It gave us great insight to Charlie, even though almost everyone hates the character, doesn't trust her. Did anyone think about her wanting to kill herself or felt it was disturbing, especially at such a young age? Yeah, I'm just going to stop there and say, yeah, it is a bit disturbing at that age. But I have to think that suicide in the apocalypse is something that everyone thinks of from time to time, because, you know, you don't want to be killed the other way, you know. Yeah. So anyway, she continues. She says, I saw a lot of depth here. The anxiety that came across, and how at first Alicia dismissed it, was real. But thinking about it, Alicia realizes that there was more to Charlie than she understood. Once she got Charlie talking, Charlie wanted to talk. Thank God. Alicia seemed annoyed with that, especially since she wanted to kill her, but I'm not sure she really did. Does everyone think about a correlation between Charlie and Lizzie? Charlie seems more fascinated with walkers, but in a more macabre way. Lizzie just couldn't face reality. Charlie killing Nick was awful. I love that Alicia kept reminding Charlie that she's going to have to live with that memory. Nightmares, depression, and maybe even isolation will be a part of Charlie's life in this apocalypse. And now, do you all think she is annoying now? Mm-hmm. Kyle, you said there is no redemption for Charlie last week. Do you believe that still? Well, do you?
I'm still on the fence in the like, it's almost kind of like, well, I at this point now, I feel like, yeah, she is a kid. You know, we now know a lot more about her backstory. I kind of do feel a little sympathy about, like, her trying to, like, you know, was going to be with their family and then watching them turn. And I guess that's time is what was what I needed, and also what they needed to, you know, get this information. Because at the moment when that everything happened, she should have been gone. And after the stadium fell, she should have been gone. You know, like, yeah. There was that. That's whenever I would have striked. But now, as time is passing, you do feel it's like, well, she's a kid. I've killed people. I've done horrible things. She was just doing the same thing. No, I'm saying as a character in the apocalypse, like Alicia, you know, it's like she even says it, you know, it's like she's done things that she's going to have to live with. So it's just making that connection. So I do, I'll tolerate her because there's just nowhere else to put her. So if she gets bitten, I'll be like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, just here, I'll stab, you know, I'll make sure you don't turn. But
sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, she's still a loose end. And unless she's good at finding things. That's what she says. So yeah. She better, yeah, that's her one thing she needs to really, you know, pay off for, because if she's not worth any skills, then there's no reason to keep her around.
So why is it when she said that, like, I'm good at fighting things, it reminded me of the Packlids.
Yeah.
Well, we look for things.
Yeah, or like Glenn, I find things.
Yeah.
But also, it just reminds me of the guy who got, you know, Glenn shoved under a dumpster.
Yeah. Well, and I think Charlie's in a bit of a bind. You know, she wanted Alicia to kill her. She doesn't want to turn. You know, she doesn't, like, she's still feeling all that guilt. But I think she's always going to be on that edge of, like, she's going to have to show her worth. Otherwise, she might run away again. That's my only thing I think she might do.
Yeah. That's what she does.
Run away, run away. Just like in the Holy Grail. Okay.
But anyways. Yeah.
To that, I would say that, The comparison between Lizzie and Charlie, obviously Lizzie had some psychotic break. You know, she was either, you know, sociopathic or psychopathic. Yeah. She had mental issues. I think in the case of Charlie, I don't see mental issues. It's a question of bad decisions. And, you know, like I said earlier, I would like to know, you know, why she killed Nick. I have to think it was in retaliation for him killing Ennis. But, yeah. You know, like, I don't see any kind of sociopathic or any personality disorders there. It's just the thing of the apocalypse and, yeah. You know, yeah. A kid making poor decisions.
Yeah. Well, we don't know how long she was with the Vultures, you know, like, true. Was it right after her parents turned and then she ran off and then ran right into their hands? You know, they right. probably did save her, and like, that was her new family because she felt close to them. And you do things when you think that that's who your side is. So,
yeah. Yeah. You're right about that. I think that she was, you know, trying to please them and certainly trying to lure the Vultures in. Mm-hmm. The stadium was probably the biggest score that they ever had. Mm-hmm. I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure she was just, like I was saying, just trying to please them. And there's more to tell of her story. I don't know if I need to hear it or not, but, well, there still is some more there.
Yeah. Honestly, I think you'll see more of her story at the very end before she actually dies, but kind of like the Prime show, there is a long-standing bad decision making amongst everybody in this apocalypse world, all across the board, stemming from Rick, Michonne, Negan, everybody, and they're all making bad decisions, and it's just us seeing that evoke and come out into play in this story as we see it fit.
Yeah, well, anyway, I think Charlie is absolutely redeemable.
Bullshit!
I'm on the fence about that. I mean, I don't know. Like, I find her less annoying now than I did. But I just hope that she keeps talking instead of running away. when somebody asks her a question.
Anyway. All right. Well, we should move on. And
yep. I was just going to tell you, move on. So you've got another piece of feedback from Glynis.
Yep. Glynis Gult says, button down the hatches to protect the house. I'm assuming she's meaning batten down the hatches because it's a standard probably term. These two also had their emotional blocks in place to try and not feel their retrospective emotions. But through the course of the episode, like the house barricades broke down, their emotional blocks and defenses were slowly stripped away and forced to face their own demons. Alicia grappling with the wanting to kill Charlie and Charlie not wanting to live on because of killing Nick, and the end both seeing a way forward together, each in their own way, helped each other. Charlie with respecting and the dead family and preserving the pics, Alicia saving Charlie from the tree walker and cooking her dinner and drying her jacket. Both still have good in them in spite of what each has done in the past.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
And I keep thinking of, I guess, well, the most obvious thing with Alicia, that she killed all the people in the whatever they call it, the pantry or whatever they called it at the ranch. But the other thing, you know, she killed that I guess he wasn't a doctor, the medical student. You know, stabbed him right in the heart when they wanted to kill Travis there.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to our own notes. So, Mark, what have you got here?
Well, I'll go back to it. It's the bottle episode thing. It was effective and I guess needed for these two characters, but it seemed a little bit redundant between the main show and this one. They need something different, and how they write, they could have incorporated a new character along the way because it looks like they're going to incorporate new characters. Maybe they could have done that within this in some way just to interject, but maybe the episode would have been gone a little longer. Mm. But I get that it's an emotion of way to develop the character and move on. The callback to the Amina episode, the story about the bird, but a little odd that Alicia was talking to a dead bird as it were her own mother. You know? it's like, okay, what's going on here? Is she losing it?
Yeah. And apparently that bird was the reason. Well, I guess I'll say this now since I started saying it. I guess the bird was the reason why the family died, because the bird got stuck in the flue of the chimney, and that caused the chimney not to vent properly, and they asphyxiated themselves, according to co-showrunner Andrew Chambliss. That was not obvious in the episode, though.
That was brought on during Talking Dead.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was explained during Talking Dead, but it was not evident in the episode. There was nothing there to me that suggested that. And I noticed another thing that was brought up in Talking Dead, since we're talking about that. And it was in one of the can't remember what they call it, Into the Dead, or the little thing they do, like going out of a, or, you know, in the commercial break, they have that little like balloons that pop up.
They give like a snippet behind the scenes of the dead. Yes.
Yeah. And they said that apparently there were, I didn't even notice this in the episode, but there were some references to Rottweilers, and apparently the dogs, there was evidence that the dogs tried to eat the family. I did not pick up on that at all. I'll have to look at for that next time when I go through the episode. But
where were the dogs?
I guess the dogs got away or something. I don't know. I guess they didn't asphyxiate themselves. I don't know why. They must have been outside or something after the family died. Like, why they didn't asphyxiate and the family did, I don't know. But anyway, Kyle, you've got some notes here.
Yeah. Some of this we've already talked about. And so I was kind of, I'll try to go through it with what we haven't really talked about. Just overall, this episode, I loved Alicia Dunham Carey's like acting. Like I, the more I watched it, the more like I just got drawn in, and she was so intense at times, and just like, I don't know, I thought she did an amazing job. Just in this episode,
I would agree. I would definitely agree with that. Like, I mean, I knew going into this that she was a good actress because, you know, of her, I didn't really see her on The Hundred, but yeah. I know that, a lot of people loved her performance on that show, but it wasn't really evident that she was a good actress after season one. Mm-hmm. And even at the beginning of season two, I mean, she had that annoying, well, kind of Charlie thing going on when she, you know, talked to whatever that Jack, tried to hook up with Jack. Anyway.
Yeah.
But, they both did a really good job. And, but Alicia Dunham Carey did a fantastic job.
Yeah. And I wanna, obviously, you know, if they're given the good material, then that's when they shine. And I think this episode, even with some of its little weak spots, this was an episode that really made both of them shine. And I loved it. I was like, I'd heard somewhere else too. And also, I was also thinking about it. And you mentioned it back in season three. And when Alicia was at the pantry, you know, basically that was kind of another bottle episode of with the Alicia, I believe, you know, but it was just like, that was one of the best moments that we had seen up at that point, and how like just amazing she was, and just like, you know, dealing with all that, you know, trying to save the people. Then of course, then she had to kill them all, and then she barely, you know, surviving herself. But that episode, I remember it was one of mine that was like, this was like the most amazing episode ever, and she's amazing. And this is what I felt like this episode was like. That is just, it was something that we've been needing for a while now. And,
I'll just say, she certainly had a chance to shine in this episode in a way that I think she probably hasn't shone, the rest of the season, the first, you know, nine episodes.
Yeah.
So yeah, she was really good in this episode, no doubt.
I loved it, like, just how, like, when Alicia was talking to Charlie about what she did, like, the beginning, she was, like, describing Nick's death and, like, how he knew he was dying in pain. And it was just, like, another wow moment of just, like, her just, I mean, there's that whole exchange. Like, she was, like, basically, you know, she does not like Charlie, and she was making sure she knew, like, what she did and how that affected her. Just that whole dialogue to me, I thought was amazing, crazy. Like Alicia finding the gun in Charlie's jacket and pointing it at her head, you know, it was like, I thought she was totally going to pull the trigger.
That was pretty chilling. By the way, it's worth saying, did you notice that this was a TV 14 episode? This wasn't a TVMA.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I was surprised.
Yeah, totally.
But, you know, maybe they had to do that given how much of the, you know, Charlie was in it.
Yeah.
You know,
totally could see that. How she was telling Charlie, you know, like, you have to live with what you've done, just like she has, or like, well, she was saying, I have, even if all this waiting for you is on the other end, is just being out on that porch, just like them. You know, she's throughout this episode, I feel like she keeps. Even though she's projecting like her, like, I'm going to make you suffer. You're going to not get out of this alive, or like, well, I'm going to kill you, or maybe I don't kill you. But like throughout this whole episode, she started kind of realizing more of herself and Charlie and just the stuff that she's done, you know, that she was having to, you know, she's still struggling with the fact that, yeah, this person killed, you know, my family, but, you know, she's also trying to be like her mom. Like, we've all done bad stuff, but we need to, like, you know, I guess, you know, like, save people, you know, she's like, Alicia still has that part in her, you know, and having this interaction where she was like, this is the last person I want to deal with to finally like, we're in this together regardless, because here's the storm, you know, we've got to survive, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, it just that seeing her throughout this episode progress to changing to the point where, okay, I'm not going to kill you, I don't like you, but we're going to get out of this together alive. I thought was the, this was exactly what I needed for me to feel anything for this girl. And I really enjoyed it. Like, I really changed. It made me think of it completely different. And then instead of being the impulsive, like, no, she's dead, gone, bye, you know, to like, you know, she really is just a little kid. Oh, she did have parents, you know, that she had to deal with that. What would I do if I was a child having to deal with that? You know? So I guess in the end, it's like, you know, like, what made this episode so great was how they used Alicia to make that connection with Charlie, and just seeing her struggle, you know, with her impulse to just kill her, to seeing Charlie as a child that, you know, Alicia was in the beginning of the apocalypse. You know, she resisted getting to know Charlie, but listened to her talk about her parents going to Galveston. And when she reads that, you know, like when, I guess Charlie was saying, when she reads, she tries to envision the places that she just read about. And then it was like, bang. And Alicia chimes in, is like, yeah, the last time I was at a beach, it was just filled with the dead. She was like, a place that kept you running. And it was funny because I was like, she's schooling Charlie to like face reality. You know, she's all like, you know what? Like, yeah, that's great, but you need to step up. You know, it's like, that's not real. Like, you've got to face, you know, what's going on. And then, you know, she did end up at the end, while she was like saying, she's like, no one's gone until they're gone, but sometimes when you're gone, you're just gone. Like, that's changing her. I feel like that's like Alicia and them whole mantra of her mother. Like, that's
right.
That's, she's pivoting now to basically, like, she does have to now accept the fact that Madison's gone, and this time she's just gone.
And I do see the fact that her death gives her a chance to become the woman that I think she wouldn't have become if Madison was still around. She would still be Madison's daughter as opposed to, you know, a leader, which I think, you know, she's going to end up being a leader here. And, you know, along with, I think, Morgan, provided that Morgan doesn't leave. But, you know, that's probably why they're 1 and 2 on the call sheet right now.
Yeah, so. I guess it's a stepping stone for her to become what she needs, instead of telling, hey, Charlie, look at the water.
Oh, that was good.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Oh, no. Yeah, and then my last thing was like the whole walker falling on the door, you know, the cellar door or whatever, and that just totally somehow works conveniently to break open the lock so they can get out. But it was just more stupid of Charlie saying, like, look, he saved us.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no, he's not a person. He didn't save you. And this is where I kind of was agreeing, where it's like, yeah, she is acting like Lizzie from season 4.
Yeah.
But I don't think she's that mental in that sense. I think she's still a child, and that she's coming out of this place of where she's been feeling guilt now with Nick and all that stuff, like, you know, to whatever happened to her with the vultures, to now she's feeling like, oh, you know, it's like being a kid, you know, it's like you get, you know, in trouble for doing something, but then, you know, to kind of make up for it, you kind of act like a kid again. You're like, oh, sorry, mom, I'm, you know, here, let me do this for you. Like, I don't know. It's just, she's kind of still a little bit immature, and you know,
she's immature.
Right. You know? Yeah. But, you know, that's where, like, Alicia chiming in about her, when she reads, she envisions those places, like, no, yeah, the last time I was there, it was just full of dead people and you have to run.
Yeah, it was like, that lost episode when everybody was dead and coming back to life.
Yeah, like, I wonder how young she was when the apocalypse happened. Like, I'm thinking, you know, it's probably like 6 or 7, maybe. No,
I would say not. About 8.
Yeah. Okay.
She has to be about 7 or 11 at this point.
Yeah. So 7 or 8, I guess.
I could not imagine what that would be like.
Yeah. Yeah. And for that means that she's, you know, quite a few years younger than even Carl was when the apocalypse happened. So, yeah. You had one more point there that I was hoping you were going to get to.
So, of course, at the end, like, when they go to find everybody else, and you know, like the mansion was completely, you know, just in, you know,
barren.
Just barren and like, you know, broken windows and all that stuff. Dory and June's bus was like overturned. So, you know, that was a obviously everybody else is gone, but it's just interesting how Alicia just, she gave up so easy, like on not looking for them. Like she's just like, oh, well, you know what? Sometimes people are just gone. And
or we'll find them eventually because they happen upon each other in some way, apparently in this world. Yeah.
But I mean, it just seemed very just like, oh, okay. It's like, it's like you go to somebody's house and they're just not home and you're like, oh, well, they're gone forever.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, obviously you don't find bodies or that I'm sure they ran somewhere.
Yeah, I would agree with that. She did kind of conveniently stop looking, you know, oh, you know, the bus is overturned and oh, look at that truck that Morgan was in. Oh, that's pretty much wasted. It didn't bother going back to the house, you know, the mansion. And I would think that would have weathered the storm. So
yeah, it was rock.
Yeah. So I would agree that it was a little odd that she would give up so easily. Quickly. Yeah, it'd be like Clark Griswold at the Grand Canyon. I think that was the first vacation movie. You know, the Griswolds get to the Grand Canyon and he takes a look for like about 5 seconds and he's like, okay, let's go. Yeah. So, well, you know, I talked about this a little bit, but, I would say that we actually had wind that was pushing things this week as opposed to pulling. So I appreciated that. And I kind of went back to last week, based on the good special effects from this episode. And I, you know, had done some reading about like tornadoes and hurricanes and how they take up. And they also will, spout things that are like close to tornado, but not quite. Like, for example, what they call a whirlwind, which, is sort of like a tornado is a whirlwind, but you know, most whirlwinds are not tornadoes. So it's like a lesser tornado-ish type thing, but not nearly as strong. Maybe that was in place last week. I don't think so, but I'll at least, you know, like Laura, which by the way, Laura, where the heck's your feedback been the last couple of weeks? I've been wanting to hear from you. But she was telling me, she was telling me that she thought that was a tornado. And when she was told that they said it's a hurricane, her response was, they're wrong. So anyway, that was off the Facebook group. That was another separate private conversation, but I think I can bring it up here. It's relevant. I listened to the Walking Dead cast and there were a couple of points that guest host Cindy made on there that were so good that I have to steal them, but I'll at least give her credit. So you're wet and you're in a house that has like, you know, teen or women clothing in it. Wouldn't you have changed out your clothes? I hadn't thought of that, but doggone it, that was a good point.
Yeah.
And also, making too much noise in a hurricane. Is that even possible? And like, I know, like, for example, the lunchroom at work, there's a bunch of like, there's like an ice machine and a fountain dispenser and a big fridge in there. And you can make all sorts of noises in that lunchroom and no one will hear you. You know, so as an example for that, like a hurricane, I would think that like even if you were banging on a house, it would be just kind of blend in with all the other noises that would occur.
Yeah,
so
yeah, the only thing I could say that would even just like, and of course they it's just it is silly that it's like that could have actually done anything. But if you think about it, all that noise is just white noise. And if you're doing a successive bang, 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 possibly that's enough to like draw a walker because it's so different than, you know, just the normal wind and stuff. So yeah. That's or the only thing I could think of is because like because they were banging the nails in. I was like, oh, maybe that's it. But
well, yeah, it could have been the movement too. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, true. But it still was like, well, really?
Yeah. That's it that I have for the episode, and we'll get into news ratings and info in a minute. But I wanted to share, because I haven't heard anybody talk about this on any podcast, so I am going to be the pioneer and talk about AMC Premiere, because I mentioned it last week that it was available to people other than having, you know, Xfinity. And I found out that I was able to get it. And thanks to a $5 Google Play credit, I was able to get it basically for free. So nice. I was like, oh, I'll try it. Why not? So a couple of things I'll say. There's some additional content on there that I think they call it Inside the Show Minds or something like that. And it is, it seems to be an 8-part series, and it's, you know, short, like 5 to 10 minute discussions between, the two, showrunners, Andrew Chambliss and Ian Goldberg, Lenny James and Danai Garcia. And it looks like they're sitting in like a diner or something. And they're just, you know, talking about the show. And I thought that was, you know, pretty interesting. I don't know if I've watched all of them. I think I maybe watched 4 or 5 of them out of the 8. But I found that was really good. And that is only available if you have AMC Premiere. It's good in the fact that you get to watch all the episodes commercial free, and they have the entire season available. So I mean, that's really good. So pretty much any of the shows that you want, all the episodes are available. So that's good. Where it's not so good is the authentication piece. What I kept finding happen is that it kept on, knocking me out of Premiere, and I would have to get out of the app and then re-sign back in. And only after I did that would it work. And this was on my phone and on my computer that I was having this issue. On my Fire TV, I did not have that problem, and it worked flawlessly there. But it doesn't seem to work on the Roku at all. So you know, I would have to think that they're working on that, because it, you know, that seems to be, you know, very popular. But it was also giving me some problems on my iPad. So it kept logging me out, and then I'd have to log back in, sometimes shut down the app and go back in. They need to fix that. So, you know, that's not so great, but otherwise, it's basically just the regular AMC app that it unlocks additional content and gives you the stuff without commercials. So, would I recommend it? Especially if you're going to watch it like on a Fire TV, and I know it's on the Apple TV. If you're, I don't know about any of the other, like, any the other, systems that you could watch it on, how good it is with that. Obviously, they've got to make it work on Roku. I don't know what's up with that, but it didn't seem to work at all. Like, I tried to watch stuff on the Roku, and I was just seeing it with commercials. Even being logged in, I was still seeing commercials and everything like that. So Premiere doesn't seem to work at all. But when I watched it on the Fire TV, it was really good. When it was working on my phone and my tablet and my browser, it worked really well. It just the authentication piece. And you know, that might not even be them. That might be a problem with, Spectrum, you know, cause I was logging in through Spectrum. So,
also update. And I always recommend this to anybody that uses Roku or Apple TV. Always update.
Yeah.
Or make sure you don't have.
Well, this. I just got the darn TV, so.
Well, you'd be surprised at how many updates happen.
I did do that. I did actually run an update, but it didn't find anything. So,
still in its trial period at this point. So,
yeah, I would say it's definitely still like in beta period. So, but it's for $5 and you know. It's not bad. And there's also other content on there that you don't normally get through the AMC app. Talking Dead, also commercial free. It was interesting that Talking Dead was actually available while the show was still on in its entirety.
That's good.
So, that's cool. Yeah, but I mean, that basically goes to show you that it was pre-recorded.
Right.
Yeah, so I was actually able to watch ahead of what was showing on screen, so that you know that just you know shows you that it's being recorded. I think a lot of that has to do with the Hardwick scandal. I tend to think that they can't like take live callers or anything like that, or they're worried
that someone will get through their screener and then come up and be like, you blah blah blah.
Yeah
I'd give it about 6 months until they change that, so.
Yeah, I think, you know, when things die down, that'll change. But, you know, and we've talked about that whole thing quite a bit, so I don't need to bring it up anymore. But all right, let's move on to news, ratings, and info.
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
What the hell is happening to the ratings of the show? Fear the Walking Dead sunk to new lows again this week. So it got a 0.63 in the 18 to 49 demographic with 1.855 million viewers. That is down from the previous low, which was last week's 0.68 and 1.878 million viewers. So, you know, it's not down much. But it was definitely down. Now, in the case of Talking Dead, it was down quite a bit. And I have to ask this question, since I brought up Hardwick before. Do you think maybe people are not watching it because they're protesting because of Hardwick being back on the show? Or is it just that people aren't watching because they're not interested in the content? Or that it's at 11 o'clock?
I think it might be.
I don't know.
Combination of things.
Yeah. Maybe. To all of that, I would have to say.
Rhetorical, okay?
Because none of us know the answer, but I have to think that those are factors. There have to be some people that are just not going to watch him because they think he's guilty, and others that it's because it's at 11 o'clock, and others because they're just not interested in this show, and it reflects the viewing of viewers of the Fear show. But it got a 0.09 in the 18 to 49. So I think that's like basically, I think it works out to, I can't remember how that works out exactly, but it's pretty low with 411,000 viewers, down from last week's 0.15 and 483,000 viewers. So, I don't know how that works out in percentages. I know that's like only 60% of the demographic number. You know, less, not as steep a decline in total viewers, but the charts that we see listed there just show that the show, you know, has now dipped below the pattern of season 3 and is at the lowest ratings of the show so far. So, I think that that's unfortunate. I think that even with some of the problems that we've had, I think it's certainly better than it was in parts of season 2. But it's just, you know, the ratings wise, it's just not doing too well.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think it's a bit of both. And I'm not trying to quote Guardians of the Galaxy at the very end when Peter Quill goes, what are we going to do? A little bit of bad, a little bit of good, a bit of both. But I don't think anybody's doing that. I think it's just a matter of people are still on the fence based upon Hardwick, and there are those people that want to see what's going on and see the interactions. So hopefully this will pass, and then we'll have something really good come out of it.
Like, I think that the show will be back on at an earlier hour come once Preacher is done for the season. And I don't know if that's next episode, next week, that sort of finale, or if it's a couple weeks out. I'm not sure. I'm a couple weeks behind.
I think it's in September. And yeah, okay. And then by the time The Walking Dead comes back, it'll be in full force.
Well, I think it'll be back at 10 o'clock before The Walking Dead comes back. So I just don't know when Preacher ends. I don't know if it's got a 10-week commitment or if it's 13. I don't know, or something.
It's probably going to be about 13. I have not watched any of Preacher. I only caught a few snippets, and it's a show that I love and I like to watch, but I have not even watched one episode this season yet.
Yeah, and I'm the same way right now. I'm 3 episodes behind on Better Call Saul, and I really want to see that. I've heard it's been really good, but I just haven't been able to catch up on it. So, okay. It says that the season 3 consists of 10 episodes. So,
oh, wow.
So just looking it up, I think that
we're in good standing at this point. Yeah, so we could all actually play catch up.
Yeah, the finale of Preacher is next week. So, like, that might mean come Labor Day it'll be back on at 10. I don't know. But anyway, so we've got info, actually. They said that the episode was inspired by The Grove, which I see, and that makes sense, you know, especially with the Lizzie versus Charlie discussion. But that was also, you know, like a mostly bottle episode that took place mostly in a house or around a house. So I can see the similarities there.
Well, and the ending too, because of how Carol brought up to Tyrese at how she killed and how he had to deal with that. And it's kind of how Alicia has to deal with Charlie killing Nick.
Ah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I put that in that same kind of thought pattern, and that's what I was thinking today on my drive home.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got some news. Telltale's The Walking Dead, the final season, has been released, at least the first part of it, and is now available on multiple platforms. Awesome. Do any of you guys play that?
Yes, I actually played the demo. I have yet to pick it up. I feel so bad because I always wind up killing Melissa, who plays the prime character.
Yeah,
and I love that character, but I feel bad because I'm not really much of a gamer. But I was playing it, and she was just like, "Stop killing me!"
I played the season 1 because I got it off stream when they had some sale for all the episodes. But I just it's one of those things where I'm like, it's I haven't had time, and then it got too far past that I maybe we'll pick it up whenever it's like on sale for like all of them.
Yeah.
Next bit of news is zombie related. It's not Walking Dead or Fear the Walking Dead, but we've talked a little bit about Train to Busan on here. At least I have. Have you guys seen that?
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah. Kyle?
I don't think I've seen it. I've heard of it, but I don't know if I've seen it yet.
You have to see it.
It's on Netflix.
I think it's in my list, and I haven't just gotten to watch it yet.
I would say take the hour and a half, 2 hours, and watch it, because I truly believe that it is one of the best zombie movies that's come out in a very long time.
Yeah, the most current zombie movie that you could watch that actually gives you the feels, and you are really embraced in the characters in it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I will watch it tomorrow because I'm off.
Yeah. So,
you go. Yeah. Well, and you'll have to tell us about it next week. But, and that is a subtitled movie because it's in Korean. South Korean director, and I'm sure I'm going to get the pronunciation wrong, Jung Sang-ho, is working on a sequel
to the hit movie. And he says it is an extension of Train to Busan in the same world, but new characters. And it deals with the aftermath on the Korean peninsula of what happened in Train to Busan. But it won't be called Train to Busan 2. It currently has the working title of Bando, or
Bando,
or maybe Bando, which is the Korean word for peninsula. Huh. So interesting. So I will definitely watch that when it comes out. Like I said, I was pleasantly surprised how good that was when I saw it. It's definitely full of action, and it has a couple of interesting twists as far as the zombie genre too. So anyway, that's definitely worth watching. So I look forward to the sequel.
I highly recommend it to anybody that has not watched a zombie movie. Yeah. There, if you buy the Blu-ray, you actually can get the English overdubbed version, as well as having the subtitled version.
Yeah, I did not see the overdubbed version. I guess there's different on Netflix. Is it the subtitle or is it the?
I have the Blu-ray. I have both, so I wound up watching both, and I prefer the subtitled version.
Okay, yeah, that's. I think dubbed version is, you know,
it's kind of like my feeling about, because I'm a big kaiju fan, and anytime I watch Godzilla films or anything from kaiju related from Japan, I have to watch the subtitled versions because it's very true to the actual script. And it's translated far better. The dubbed versions are pretty much, it's kind of gone through alliteration. And I know some people who do anime, and my old boss at a recording studio has to do the dubbed versions at his studio for some anime. And it doesn't hold true to the actual script of what it came from those countries.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a thing. I mean, I always thought it looked dumb to have dub stuff, you know. But anyway, let's move on to the next bit of news. And that is for fan favorite Stephen Ogg, who, of course, played...
Bullshit!
No, he didn't play BS. But he certainly did say that. And, of course, he was Simon in The Walking Dead season... the end of season 6, of course, season 7, and died in season 8. Spoiler. But anyway, I was pleased to get an article come across that says that he is going to be in the new TV series based on another Korean film, actually, that was English, but it was Korean directed. Snowpiercer.
Mm-hmm.
And I know
I like that movie too.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one,
but it's really good. You got to.
Chris Evans is in that,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah.
A lot of big stars are in it.
Yeah. Yes. So he is going to have a recurring role, and they describe it as a key recurring role opposite Jennifer Connelly. And no, I had a crush on her.
as we all did.
Yeah.
From Labyrinth.
Yeah. Anyway, Jennifer Connelly, and I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but David Diggs.
I would say that's right.
Yeah. They are in the futuristic thriller based on the acclaimed 2013 movie of the same name. And it says that Ogg will play a character called Pike. Hardened and battle-scarred, Pike was a career conflict serving time in the Cook County Jail for armed robbery at the time of the freeze, but escaped. And he is a leader in the tale. I don't know what that means because I haven't seen the film.
Okay.
And, yeah. And is a warrior of his people. So anyway, sounds really interesting. That's definitely a movie I want to see. I just haven't gotten around to it.
It might still be on Netflix. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Last thing has to do with Fear, and it's not so much news, but it is an opinion piece from uprocks.com, and there's a link to it on the Facebook group.
And that is, it's titled, After Major Upheavals, Is Fear the Walking Dead in Trouble? And the facts are that, they say on the Fear the Walking Dead subreddit, there is a lot of anger and, largely directed at the, showrunners for, you know, getting rid of, Madison and, you know, taking this direction. And I totally understand that because it seemed season three that the show was finally
getting its legs
firing in all cylinders. Yeah. And they blame the new showrunners and of course Gipplegate for changing the direction of the show and getting rid of Dave Erickson. You know, we don't know how that played out. Like, it was announced, of course, that Dave Erickson was leaving, that he was going to be stepping down. And originally he was going to be an executive producer, but then he signed a deal with another company. So, you know, after that, he was out. So that brought in Gimple and, you know, he brought in Chambliss and Goldberg. And, you know, I still am skeptical about why they had to kill off Madison. I could kind of maybe see where they're trying to go now, but, it's difficult, you know, it's difficult. I understand why a lot of people are mad. And, you know, the best when, I think saying that the show's in trouble is a little not realistic because A, the show's already been renewed, and B, you know, even with these ratings as low as they are, they're still really high for cable TV. You know, the show has to drop quite a bit to get to points where it would be considered canceled. And in fact, I'm going to look up like last night's Better Call Saul, and I can guarantee you that the ratings are not as high as they were for Fear. Better Call Saul got a 0.4 in the 18 to 49 with 1.508 million. So that clearly goes to show you that in the demographic, you know, it's quite a bit higher. And, you know, even in the total number of viewers, it's still like 300 and almost 400,000 more. So, and Better Call Saul is, I believe, the third highest rated show on the network.
But we digress.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
All right. Before we actually got some feedback from posting this article. So before we get into that, I want to get your impressions. Do you think the show is in trouble?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. I find part of me is like, I'm always questioning, like, you know, I don't watch TV like I feel like they are looking at what a viewer needs to do. You know, like if I wasn't podcasting the show, if I wasn't watching it on Sunday, I'd be watching on a Monday or Tuesday. Like, you know, I DVR so much of my stuff.
Yeah.
And then I watch it throughout the week. And if I'm too busy, then on the weekend, we just binge all of our shows. So it's like, and to me, I'm like, aren't there like, you know, what's the plus three and all that, you know, like, aren't they like up in the millions? And to me, it's like, well, then that's a lot of people still watching the show.
Yeah. And to that end, it's the same website that I looked at, TV by the Numbers. For whatever reason, they're not publishing the Live Plus 3 and the Live Plus 7. They're way behind on that. I don't know why, but the last time they had any articles on that was in July. So, like, the Live Plus 7 ratings for July 23rd to 29th. So I don't know why that is. Maybe they figure because it's in the summer, but they're behind. And I don't know of any other website that publishes the DVR ratings. The one that I go to for the regular the nightly ratings, Showbuzz Daily is the name of it, .com. They only do the overnights. They don't do the Live Plus 3 and Live Plus 7, the DVR and on demand stuff. So I don't know how the show did in the Live Plus 3 for last week, because I don't have an article to look at. Hopefully, maybe they'll publish the Live Plus 7s. But I will say that I am really annoyed that they don't do it regularly, because, like, literally, they're the only website that publishes those ratings. I don't know how to get a hold of the Nielsen ratings myself, or else I would do it. it is annoying that they don't publish it. So when I get some of those ratings for, you know, the first two episodes, if I get them, I'll share that, but at least on the Facebook group. But I don't have them, so that's why I don't talk about them right now. I don't think that the show is in trouble. Like I said before, it's still high in the ratings. But, you know, it does make you wonder, okay, so they've been renewed to season 5. Are they going to go past that, or are they going to stop at season 5? You know, and I think a lot of it will have to depend on how it does between now and, you know, midway through season 5 to find out if it gets renewed.
And I have it's just in the back of my mind, because there's a gimple floating out in the distance, that there seriously could be a possibility that they merge the show. But
it's a trap!
I could see them totally doing that, and some character or doing something, and then, you know, they do that just so that they basically pull someone, or Lenny James comes back, and then maybe he keeps one character or somebody, or they all die. But to me, I'm like, that is not out of a realm of possibilities with who.
True.
No.
I don't know. I think that a merge is possible. I think what I could see more likely is another series. You know, they'll do like, they'll get rid of, The Walking Dead, and they'll bring it back with The Walking Dead, The Next Generation, or something like that. You know,
well, there is still talk of another sideshow.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, what I could see,
do it. Who knows?
Yeah. And it's kind of funny, because I made the Next Generation joke. It's funny because if you recall, in season 4 of Deep Space Nine, they brought on Worf, who was a character from the Next Generation, and it's very similar here. They brought on Morgan, who was a character.
Well, there's always, you know, kind of that similarity of old shows that have intertwining shows.
Yeah.
And they're always going to bring it. And we always knew that in some way, even though they denied it.
Yeah.
And not to coin a phrase from a really bad comedy movie with Matt Damon and what's his name?
Yeah.
You know, they were, you know, conjoined twins, and it's like, she was like, deny, just embrace, you know, and they wound up embracing this. And I wouldn't be surprised, eventually it will merge in some way and then move on, because, when Next Generation came out, they put out DS9, they kind of segued and moved on, and then they did the same thing where you saw other characters from DS9 or Next Generation go into Voyager, because you got the Q and everything else. I'm sorry to bring Star Trek into this, but honestly, it's kind of, that's been ongoing since the 60s, and they've incorporated all that. Now this is a new version of within the zombie apocalypse, and they could do that.
And I think that I think what they did with Star Trek in the, you know, 80s, 90s and noughts are a similar kind of thing to what AMC's planning to do with the Walking Dead universe. I think that they'll probably do a third show, you know, probably after The Walking Dead ends up, and it will may even have characters from both shows. I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it has characters from one of the shows, just to, you know, have that continuity. Cause it, like you're saying, like in Deep Space Nine, you know, they brought Worf on, but they had Chief O'Brien, you know, who came from Next Gen. And, okay, we'll stop the Star Trek stuff.
And the Ferengi, too.
Oh, well, yeah. They brought, you know, races and but also characters that were from the other, you know, series. And I see this kind of thing happening here. And, you know, not to point this directly at AMC, but they're also going to try to do this with Game of Thrones too, HBO.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so this is the thing, you know, and Disney's trying to do that with Star Wars right now too. So,
yeah,
you know, they're doing all the movies, but they're, you know, going to have TV series coming out, more animation, but they're also doing a live action Star Wars. And this is what they do. They're trying to have a
multiverse.
Yeah. Multiverse. Yeah. So I don't know if Fear is going to go as long as The Walking Dead will. I wouldn't be surprised if The Walking Dead either ends after season 9 or maybe season 10.
I would say season 11 or season 12.
No, it might be season 11 or season 12. It all depends. But I doubt that Fear will go that long, but you never know.
I would
say
it'll probably go 5 to 6, maybe 7.
Yeah. So I think that it's extreme, but it's certainly not got the ratings that it had. And I think, there's various reasons for it, but I think, Madison's character, you know, like I said, I was one of those people that didn't love her at first, but I certainly do now. And I,
miss her. Yeah, we all do. Yeah, I did.
All right. Well, we actually got some feedback on this. So, Mark, why don't you read Glynis's feedback on this? What did she have to say about this
article? Well, Glynis Gold states, yes, it's certainly in trouble, but since Fear the Walking Dead season 5 is already renewed, they, the showrunners, directors and producers, etc., have a chance and some time to write this show and get it back on track. Although there was still hate for the show right from season 1, and it sometimes seems people love to hate it, same goes for The Walking Dead, but in spite of this, The Walking Dead and to a lesser extent Fear the Walking Dead are still one of the top cable shows, which is true. I think Fear the Walking Dead season 4 is the best season so far, though it was sad to lose Frank Delane. He wanted to leave, but maybe him leaving was due to the changes made with replacing the showrunner, which was maybe an attempt to boost rating by rebooting the show and thus axing off Kim Dickens by AMC. Frank Delane looked at this and asked to be written off, so it backfired on them. Did AMC look at those negative comments on Kim Dickens acting and decide to kill her off? I don't know if it's worrying. With even The Walking Dead, with changes there, with Carl being killed off and Andrew Lincoln and Lauren Cohan wanting to leave, makes you wonder what the hell is going on behind the scenes.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I said it before. I tend to think that they, you know, did a focus group and determined that, you know, there was a strong negative impression of Madison's character, and that she didn't like test as highly as Rick Grimes's character, so they decided to get rid of her, you know. I don't know if that's the case, but I have to think, I wouldn't be surprised. I can't say I have to think that it's true, but if you were the showrunners of this show and you had Kim Dickens and you had this strong character of Madison, would you really want to kill her off? Like, no. Do you think that would be something that you would do? Or are you taking direction from the higher ups? You know,
well, honestly, it's an empowering of women too within the show, because I thought she was a great leader.
Yeah.
And I thought personally, wow, we have a strong female lead in this new show. And I thought after season 3, wow, we're going to have something great coming out of season 4. And then out of the blue, they pull the rug from beneath our feet. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. We got one more bit of feedback from Reese Nicole Brown. Kyle, you want to read that?
Yeah, and Reese, she says, I don't think the show is in danger of being canceled, but I do think a lot of the changes they've made aren't working the way they hoped they would. The Morgan crossover hasn't worked really well, in my opinion, because they haven't used him in the right way. John Dory is a great new addition to the cast, but they've misused him too by giving him that injury. And the other three new cast members, Thea, Charlie, and June, are characters that range from boring to downright unlikable, and they don't make me want to watch the show. This show will never be The Walking Dead, and the biggest mistake they made was trying to recapture the Walking Dead fans they lost in the first season, and forgetting that the show had a loyal audience that stuck around and liked the show for three seasons. I just don't think this season has been good enough to justify all the changes that they've made.
Well, I certainly agree with some of what you said, Reese. Althea can be annoying, or boring. June has been, you know, I've had issues with her character.
She's a fishy flip flops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm growing, to like her more now. I want to see where she goes. Maybe some of that has to do with meeting Jen Elfman. I don't know. But I think that, I'm willing to give that character the benefit of the doubt where I didn't before. But, we all know how we feel about Charlie. And she's a little bit better after this episode. I'd say moderately better, but, downright unlikable is, for a kid. I mean, the last kid that I can remember that is this unlikable, and I would probably say more so, would be Joffrey from. I mean, and he's a little bit older, but yeah. Now there is an unlikable character.
Yeah, he was just a petulant child.
That, yeah,
yeah, yes, but petulant child that, you know, was the king. So
yeah,
yeah. All right. Well, anyway, I agree with what a lot of you what you say. I'm not really sure about the Morgan crossover, because I think he's been effective. What I miss, or what I really wanted to see, was him interacting with Madison.
Yeah.
And that I feel a bit cheated out of. And, I talked a lot about the story structure of the first half, you know, felt very manipulated by the end of it. John Dory, yeah, they didn't use him well because he was out of commission there for a couple episodes, or at least partially. But I think he'll be back, and he'll be that character that we love. So, all right, you guys have anything more to say about it, or should we just wrap this thing up?
Yeah. I think that was all.
A lot.
Yeah, I think we did.
We've been going for quite a while. But all right, to submit feedback, Kyle, why don't you tell the listeners how to do that?
To submit your theories and feedback, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio, or use the SpeakPipe widget. Call 304-837-2278. Or like most people, post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, and you can find that at www.facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. And remember, the deadline for submitting feedback next episode is Tuesday, August 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. You can also connect with us on Twitter, and our Twitter handle is @walkingdeadgsm.
To support us, one of the best ways you can do it is to subscribe. That way, in whatever podcast client that you use, because that way you'll get the next episode when it comes out. In some podcast clients, like, for example, Apple Podcasts, or, you know, what used to be called iTunes, it's still iTunes on the desktop, of course, that has the ability of giving a rating or review. So if you use something that allow you to do that, you could help us out by giving us a 5-star rating and definitely a review. And we want to thank Cajun Cartoon for their 5-star review. I don't know if it's a he or a she, but thank you, Cajun Cartoon. And Cajun Cartoon says, these guys are always fun to listen to.
Thank you.
That's good. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think that's the first bit of, feedback that we've gotten or review we've gotten since Mark, you joined the show. So if I'm not mistaken. So that's good. I'm glad to see that we're entertaining. So, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple. If you're on Apple Podcasts, because that'll bring you to all of the podcasts within the Golden Spiral Media Network. There is, if you're watching Castle Rock, there is a Castle Rock Zone. Bring that to your attention. There are a few other podcasts that are on right now, but I know that that is one series that's going on. That is active. There are other ways to support the network by going to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. You can find out about what they are. You may have noticed if you're a subscriber to the Star Trek Discovery podcast, you did not get the episode yet that I promised you. It's because I was unable to record it last week. We're going to try again later this week or this weekend. Hopefully should be able to record it, so hopefully next week you will have an episode discussing all of the news featuring Star Trek, and the new Picard series and of course Star Trek Discovery. Cause there's a ton of news there and we want to talk about it. So you'll hear it then. Mark, what's going on with Panels to Pixels?
We have everything on, Punisher up. We are continuing our podcast. You'll get Jessica Jones, coming the following week. Steve and I will be wrapping up, Luke Cage, and you'll be able to hear that in the following week after that. So, shame on you, Steve, for not sending any feedback to Fear Walking Dead Talk Through. Oh my God. So, you could find.
What?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can follow Panels to Pixels on the Next Level Podcast Network, and you can hear me and Steve talk there. Thank you.
Nice.
All right, well, next episode is Season 4, Episode 11, and it's titled The Code. It is written by co-showrunner Andrew Chambliss, who is also on Talking Dead this week. I guess he's not going to be on next week. And Alex Delisle, and it's directed by Tara Nicole Ware. And the description is kind of short, but it tells you a lot. It says, Morgan's journey is derailed by some new acquaintances. So a couple little things that we heard from Talking Dead this week. We're going to see an alligator. I don't know if it's going to be next episode, but we're going to see an alligator before the end of the season. And Chambliss on Talking Dead said, we may not like it when we see it. So I have a feeling somebody might get eaten by the alligator.
Charlie?
Or something. Charlie.
I won't mind that.
Or is it a Zed alligator?
Yeah, I don't know.
And it also says on Talking Dead that Drew Scott, you know, from Property Brothers, and two surprise cast members discussed the latest episode. So I imagine those are going to be the new acquaintances.
Yeah.
Cool. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. All right. So that's it. A very long episode, actually. I didn't expect this to go so long, but that's it for this time. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.